So this is sort of a systems builder perspective of what I think is a field which is going through sort of significant transitions, and I'll just sort of give you my thoughts on it. So at this, I think at this time, sort of at almost to the decade from when Greg and Bill Kaiser sort of initially had the what I think is the first paper in wireless sensor networking back in 1996, the first platform. So it's almost 10 years, and sort of if you look at during this time, clearly sort of a lot has happened, both in terms of sort of a lot of system components, tools, stuff like that, to the extent that now sort of there are several companies where you can buy commercial variants of things that we play with in our research, all sort of things in terms of software, networking protocols, so on and so forth. As well as, very importantly, through sort of centers like Sense out here, a fair bit of experience in deploying these things at fairly decent scales and at fairly sort of decent periods of time, sort of hundreds of sensors, months to years kind of deployments, and we aren't the only one. Several other institutions have been doing the same thing. So what's this transition that I was talking about? So what it boils down to is that if you look at sort of if you go back to the late 90s or sort of the original proposals and sensor nets and all, the research agenda sort of largely boiled, revolved around what you can say resource constraints and autonomy. That is, we wanted these things, smart dust, tiny devices, lasting forever and being autonomous, self-configuring and all kinds of aspects. And that led to a whole set of problems which, while by no means are solved, nevertheless represented the sort of first generation of research agenda. Limited battery energy, that sort of obviously led to a lot of these tinier platforms like moats and so on and so forth. Limited battery energy implied limited resources, and that led to sort of whole revisiting sort of operating systems and protocols and all to sort of cope with the lack of resources. Fair bit of work by people like Professor Kumar out here in terms of how we cope with scaling and sort of ideas like exploiting coordinations among sensors. And then some other sort of more technology-specific details, like in this realm, communication was much more expensive than processing. So instead of just shipping bits around, a lot of emphasis was on doing in-network processing as a means to sort of address this issue. Another interesting thing was that unlike much of communications and networking here, receiver dominated transmitter, and that led to revisiting a lot of protocols. And finally, a lot of work in terms of how can the network find the timing relationship, node locations, so on and so forth. And sort of a lot has happened there. But I think at some level, over the past couple of years, driven in part by sort of some of the experiences gained from deployment, we're going through sort of a transition. So the early themes were sort of thousands of devices, autonomy, and focus on communication and communication-related resources. And over the next remainder of the talk, sort of I would like to make the case that what has emerged and sort of some ideas addressing some of these newer themes have already emerged is something which is a lot richer, the system ecologies that actually get deployed or which are actually proven useful are a lot richer than sort of the smart dust kind of model, fairly heterogeneous, a lot of different kind of devices, we'll sort of talk about that. Instead of autonomy, interactivity has emerged as a very important role, and a lot of it has to do with that humans can play a fair bit of, provide a fair bit of help in solving some of the very hard problems, which just sort of trying to do it autonomously incredibly difficult. Things having to do with ensuring system integrity, things having to do with ensuring data integrity, and that sort of you'll see in the emerging systems that the human tier is an extremely important one. Another sort of change has been that sort of if you look at some of the early papers and all, the emphasis was on communication, as I pointed out. Well, as it turns out, particularly as we started using sensors which were not just toy sensors, but rather doing something actually useful, it's the sensing, the capturing of data, the acquisition of data itself, which has proven to be the bottleneck. And the role of in-network processing, which I previously mentioned was about sort of processing things so that I could ship fewer bits. It turns out probably a bigger use of that is to really be smart about sensing. Some people call it active sensing or cognitive sensing or all sort of terms go around, but the idea being that within the network there is computation which is helping the system decide when to capture the data, where to capture the data, so that it achieves fidelity goals, data quality goals, and so on and so forth. And I think that's proven to be sort of one of the key applications of processing within the network. And finally, integrity. So this sort of first sort of 10 years have really been about getting the systems to work, dealing with the resource constraint, and so on and so forth. But just getting some data is not terribly useful. It has to be sort of good, high quality data. And I will try to make the case that in a lot of deployments, it's the integrity of both the data as well as the system, which is really the showstopper. And sort of a lot of next generation issues really are being driven by ensuring sort of design for integrity. How can we achieve that? So in essence, what's happening is that originally, sort of ideas revolve around highly redundant systems, long-term deployments, autonomy, a lot of focus on sort of get the data and then at the back end, the scientist or whoever analyzing it. Calibration was thought we just could do it and deploy and then forget about it. Sort of things like security and privacy and those issues hadn't come to the fore. And the model was, these are dedicated systems. You design them for a single application, they run for a long time. What has emerged, they are sort of something a lot more complicated. Placement of sensors has become sort of a significant issue in terms of where to sample. The deployment model proven to be a lot richer. From the original sort of single application long-term deployment, there are two sort of distinct offshoots. One model is somewhat like what's common in a lot of other sciences, observatories, which are long-term, but they go, but over their lifetime, they get used for many different applications by many different users. And the other model being sort of sensing campaigns, as we at Sense call it, but rather notion being that we want to collect data for some specific thing, so we rapidly deploy a sensor network out there, collect the data over some short period of time, intensively and pull out. And that raises a whole different set of issues in terms of how to make this rapid deployment happen. Part of the answer there is user interaction during the deployment process, and therefore instead of autonomy, user interactivity being a role. Instead of pre-calibration, continually considering integrity, system integrity, data integrity, safety and robustness being issues, and finally, this sort of multiple users and multiple applications. So sort of a lot richer set of problems. What this has led to is, at some level, a few what I would say are sort of termed as new architectural principles, but they sort of run counter to what our initial assumptions were. I'm going to touch upon some of them. A lot of people have done some interesting work in this space over the past year or two. And then focus on just one, namely the data integrity and system integrity, which I think is kind of almost a show-stopping concern. So one of the issues, one of the early tenets were sort of tiny devices, relatively flat, homogeneous network, being the notion of sensor network. What has turned out to be something a lot richer. So here I kind of show some of the kind of nodes that are being used in sense deployments, ranging from, of course, things like modes, representative of the smartest end of things, to microservers, to more complicated devices. This is a node called Leap by Bill Kaiser. This is the NIMS node, which is a robotic node, which sort of goes across cables. This is robotic boat out of USC, which is used for sampling in lakes and rivers and so on and so forth. So as you could see, the kind of nodes are all over the map, from sort of simple static devices to more complicated sort of processing devices with sort of array sensors and so on and so forth, to actuated devices of all sort of forms, sort of controlled mobility, infrastructure-assisted mobility, and lest we forget, increasingly also devices that we carry, things like cell phones and all, are emerging as very viable sort of sensing devices as part of the spectrum. All of these provide sort of different reside in different corners of the space, and ultimately, sort of the system design problem is, given a particular application, how do you deploy sort of the right mix of these things to appropriate to sort of achieve your particular system goals? So a lot richer problem, and I think in most application contexts, still sort of poorly understood in terms of where, what is the right mix? Should we be ad hoc? Should we be centralized? Should there be infrastructure? What nature should it take? So and so forth. A second sort of difference which emerged was that early on, sort of feeling was these would be static devices, and actuation was kind of frowned upon as something which is rather costly. And indeed, at some level, it is. Actuation is expensive, but right way of using actuation can result in very significant advantages. So imagine you are sensing some phenomenon in kind of the real world. There are obstacles and so forth. So your idealized model of sensors with sort of disk sensing models and disk communication, sort of circular communication models and all, just don't work. Obstacles are part of life. And so most realistic deployment end up requiring either extremely dense deployment of static devices so as to get adequate coverage, or an alternative being you can start using actuation to your systems, that is either sensors that could move or sensors which could reorient. So I showed the NIMS node, or you could have pan zoom type cameras and so on and so forth. So mobility, it turns out, is a significant enhancer of performance in the sense of coverage and resolution. So here I've kind of shown that for a simple camera, a standard commercial camera, relative to its static mode, if you have pan, tilt, and zoom, the kind of advantage in terms of covered volume that you get is significant. And by coordinating it across multiple sensors, you can significantly improve the system performance for a given deployment density. And that makes things a lot more practical. As it turns out, mobility in its various manifestation, whether it be constrained actuation, as in NIMS, nodes going across sort of cables and thereby being able to sense sort of in the 3D space, to sort of constrained articulation like cameras, and finally sort of fully autonomous kind of nodes. So this is a little robot which is actually used in military and so forth, also capable of going through relatively rough terrains and all, and this provides kind of a different spectrum of mobility. So a set of problems over the past couple of years, folks who are part of the NIMS project here have been addressing, are really revolve around how can we harness mobility, how can, and for sensing, mobility for communication. A third principle which has emerged is that the notion of sensing is not at a single scale. So again, this goes back to the original rather homogeneous model of sensor nets, leading to something sort of a lot richer. And one model which has sort of proven quite useful is this notion of combining sensors at different scales. So you could have sensors which are sort of poorer quality sensors, give you a large field of view, give you sort of a good snapshot of the phenomenon at sort of one shot, combined with sort of higher accuracy sensors, perhaps with limited sort of field of view. So this kind of shows some work in Professor Geisel's group out here and Greg's students doing this, where basically a camera together with a high quality light intensity sensor working together result in a significant improvement in sort of amount of sampling you have to do. And it sort of goes back to that we really need to optimize for sampling. The idea being the camera provides a wide field of view, identifies areas where sensing resources should be focused, and then an actuated sort of high quality sensor is moved to sample at the right places, as opposed to either using a poor sensor and thereby sacrificing on resolution, or just using a high quality sensor but then having an immensely long sensing. And the final sort of point I wanted to make was this whole recognition that sensing is important. So to put Greg on spot, this is a sort of famous quote by him, every bit transmitted reaches closer to death. I think this needs some modification. Every sample taken sort of brings you even closer to death. And that is indeed true, because if you look at sort of the platforms which are being used, very different from your mode, whether it's typical sensing board with thermistor and sort of relatively cheap passive sensors. What we have are sort of modalities like imaging or high quality sensing. So this kind of shows a platform for more, but this is a light sensor designed to really achieve sort of levels which are close to what professional reference quality sensors achieve. And there you have to pay for energy. A lot of these sensing modalities are hundreds of milliwatts, so your radio and processor platform, which are of the order of 10 milliwatt type power consumptions, they are quite a bit less important in real deployments as opposed to sort of the first generation type sensors. So the key implication out here boils down to is you really need to optimize for sampling. And if you look at the recent sort of year or two of work, I mean, folks like Rob working on adaptive sampling, so sort of sensor instead of doing uniform spatial sampling and uniform temporal sampling, deciding within the network using local intelligence when and where to sample. And then, of course, sort of really new ways of looking at things, so work at RISE on things like compressive sampling, which are emerging in this direction. Okay, so the final sort of thing in which I'm going to spend rest of my talk on is really integrity, which I think is sort of almost a barrier challenge. So these sensor nets are monitoring the physical world, but we need to monitor them, because otherwise you're really going to get garbage data out. And what are the problems here? Well, there's a whole list of them. So noise, this is something that sort of signal processing techniques and all deal quite a bit with, but sort of more interesting are malfunctions and malicious adversaries. Malfunctions, I mean things like sort of sensor getting stuck at a value, or sensor which is miscalibrated, as well as sort of software fails. I mean, those of you who have tried implementing anything, sort of software on most of these platforms is much more fragile than software running on sort of our workstation class machines. Memory corruption, protocol logic bugs, limited memory size, all of these things lead to some interesting behavior. And also in many realms, malicious adversaries who can sort of mess with your sensing and mess with your communication are becoming an important part of the problem. So if you look at sort of the overall chain from sort of the physical world going through sensing channels, transducers, processing, and then kind of a digital end of things, there's a whole slew of problems at every stage. And I think the hard problems in which I'm going to talk about are really at this realm. A lot of things have been studied in the networking side of things, but at this physical interface between the sensor and the physical world are where a lot of bad things happen. They're hard to take care of, and I think that's where a lot of challenges lie. Things like, what is the impact of problems out here on the eventual quality of information, where you, after you are combining sort of data from a bunch of different sensors at the back end? How can we detect integrity problems? If you are sending bad data, well, you're wasting resources to begin with, but also potentially you're corrupting your overall quality of information. How can we design the system to be resilient to them? And also, how can we remediate them? Or how can we fix them? Particularly if we have these short-term types sensing campaigns, I mean, you cannot go deploy these things, come back, only to learn some sensors were producing bogus data and the whole campaign was wasted. So online integrity monitoring and the ability to fix it really are sort of required as components within the system. So what kind of problems are there? Some of them are benign. By benign, I mean they're non-malicious causes. Adverse sensing channels, so if you're using things like imagers and all, they are very sensitive to ambient conditions, as well as sort of more intrinsic factors like fault. So this is some work done by Laura, where sort of she sort of put a bunch of modes together with reference quality data loggers, looked at the behavior, and a lot of funny things happen. In this particular case, it turned out that so this has temperature readings, but this one mode is misbehaving, and it turns out, as it so happened, there was an electrical short between two ADC channels, so that the data which actually is getting reflected out here is from, I think, the humidity sensor. So totally bogus data. Here, similar experiment but measured humidity, and here you see that, yeah, I'm sort of getting similar kinds of shapes on all the sensors, but clearly the readings have a fair bit of variance, and that is illustrating the calibration issue. So all these things need to be calibrated, and they need to be continually calibrated, because calibration parameters drift. They're a function of ambient conditions, and so on and so forth. Also, you would see when these things begin to die, so these are motes with batteries, and when the battery voltage start getting low, all sort of funny things happen. So clearly, sort of, data is tricky, and if all you have is, at the end, a database of readings collected, sort of, that's not going to suffice. You need to be able to analyze the system as it is running. A lot of these issues came to the fore in some of our, I would say almost all our deployments, but I've picked one particular example, which one of Deborah's students did, which was sort of a study of arsenic concentration in groundwater in Bangladesh, where this sort of an issue. And she kind of went there for a, after sort of very careful design over some weeks, they went there for a couple of 2 week duration where they deployed sort of a bunch of sensors in the ground at different depths, collected data. A lot of interesting things happened. So what this is showing out here is for one of the sensors, how the issue of calibration comes to fore. You pre-calibrate these things, put them on the ground, measure things, take them out at the end, again find the calibration parameters, and they're different. So over time, the calibration parameters have changed. So the actual, how to interpret the readings which were collected during that 2 week period is kind of tricky. A lot of other faults, broken lead, shorts, the values lying outside the range. It turns out these sensors have sort of a limited linear range, and then kind of they very rapidly saturate, and if sensor readings lie outside the linear range, not terribly useful. So these kind of deployments have given sort of a fair bit of idea on what kind of statistics exist for these different faults and how to cope with them. One thing which emerged was really the importance of tool that would let you dynamically analyze a system behavior interactively. And some of this work has resulted in, as I'll show, first generation of tools which let the user, as he or she is deploying these things, assess the integrity of data coming back and then take sort of corrective actions to do it. Integrity is not just about data, it's also about sort of other aspects of the system. This is showing data from our deployment at James Reserve, and what you'll see, a lot of instances of missed data. Something happened to the network. And it's not just the network. This is a snapshot of data in a data logger. Even that has missed data. Presumably because of computation overload or some other sort of problem. So data loss because of other aspects of the system is an issue. Recently, there's a paper by Matt Welsh and company from Harvard describing their experience with deploying sensor networks up on a volcano. And what this plot shows is that as they went around deploying it, obviously they did a lot of pre-planning and all, but this was their actual deployment, and what this shows is how many nodes were active and what was happening. So this shows things crashed and so on and so forth. As they deployed, they identified a lot of issues having to do with their timing synchronization protocols, bugs in the software and all. It took a fair bit of effort before the system kind of stabilized. During this time, faults which were not seen in the lab scale testing that they did sort of came to the fore. So what that kind of shows is the software itself can be a source of a lot of integrity problems, end effect of which, of course, is either affecting quantity of data or quality of data. So what all of this translates to is that really designing for integrity or designing for robustness is extremely crucial. And I think the technology is still at a stage where any improvements because of Moore's law and all are really being directed at improving the scale of these systems. So the onus of achieving integrity really falls onto the algorithms, the software, and sort of that presents sort of at some level kind of a challenge which the field has to face. So what would it involve? Well, if you need to identify something is broken, I mean, there has to be a notion of what should it be doing, and that kind of lead to that there has models would play a very important role, whether there be models with, about the phenomenon given to you externally or models which the system kind of learns as it goes along, so as well as models of how bad things behave, not just good things. So what are the characteristics of these faults and all? Some other fields, such as integrated circuits and all, where faults which occur during the manufacturing process and all are are extremely critical. They have placed a lot of attention to things like testing and verification and sort of runtime testing procedures and so on and so forth. The analogous thing still sort of doesn't exist in SimCenex, and sort of what are the faults occurring? How do we formally model them? How do we model their impact? How should the phenomenon behave? How can we detect these faults? All those kind of issues are there. Algorithmically, I think problems boil down to kind of three things. How do we detect? How do we design the system to be resilient to them? And finally, how can we diagnose the cause so that then we can remediate it? So there are sort of algorithmic as well as other aspects of the system which can come to play in all of these things. There are several ideas that are floating around. So for detection, Mark, for example, when he was at Bell Labs, used to work on a lot of things having to do with detecting fraud on telephone networks. A lot of those techniques for detecting anomalous behavior are potentially useful. Also useful often are just using infrastructure assist. That is, you can either introduce known stimulus or you can bring a high quality sensor periodically to sort of validate the integrity of the system. And if you have actuated capabilities like NIMS node and all, a lot of this could be done autonomously by the system. Actuated auditor nodes can visit and kind of audit the network, as well as sensors which are designed into the system to help sense the system itself as opposed to sense the phenomenon. So the state of the system. This is often done. So for example, again, in sort of some of the modern electronic hardware, you would see temperature sensors on chip, which continually monitor the on-chip temperature and then kind of control the behavior. Analogous things here would be happening. Designing resilience. So traditionally, the focus of fusion processes and all have really been on sort of noise. I think equal consideration needs to be given to issues of faults and sort of how different procedures are resilient to different kind of faults. Techniques may also involve sort of using multi-scale sensing, which I mentioned previously. So sort of in our camera and light example, light sensor example, one sensor can act as a cross-check for the other. And then finally, diagnosis and remediation. This would help guide when should we recalibrate the sensors? Which sensor should we recalibrate? Should a sensor be replaced? Should we reconfigure the processing parameters? All sort of issues out here. And this will involve not just algorithm support, but also node platform support. A lot of current generation platforms are just not designed for this. Whereas in other contexts where robustness has been an issue, a lot of attention has to be placed. Every time we turn on the car goes through a self-check of all the sensors involved and all, and those procedures are very designed up front. So design for integrity in the hardware would be an important issue. And finally, system software support, mechanisms which will help the software itself to be tolerant of a lot of these problems. I mentioned that some of our early exposures into these data integrity problems and all has led to kind of a first generation of tools. So out of sensor, a couple of tools called Sympathy and Confidence, which have taken a first stab at this notion of online integrity monitoring. They're both rule-based system. Sympathy helps identify problems in the network which are affecting the quantity of data, packet losses and so on and so forth, whereas Confidence helps identify for chemical sensors where the problem might be, that sort of some sensor is sort of having problems such as calibration and so on and so forth, and then also recommends user action which can help remediate it, so like go visit that sensor to recalibrate it. The rules in this case are derived from sort of expert opinion, so to say. And these are sort of functional systems, and but I think a lot more needs to be done in terms of theoretical approaches which can be brought to bear. There's a lot which can happen on fault detection and diagnosis, where in a sense you have to either identify that sensor data is deviating from what is plausible or is matching something which is implausible. So these are kind of pattern detection kind of approaches, and these are somewhat more check against a reference, which could either come from an external sensor or by having a stimulus or by having some sort of model. I think later in the week, Rob is talking about some work he's been doing on blind calibration, but they're using some signal processing approaches. There are other approaches that people are exploring, physics-based model, which Laura is doing with some folks in civil engineering, as well as sort of statistical models as well. I'm going to skip a few slides. The other thing I would like to mention is, and this goes back to the other source of vulnerabilities, malicious adversary. And what that does about is that it's not just about integrity of data, but also being able to exercise control over the data. And this is another area where algorithmic innovations can play a significant role. And this is coming from sort of a change in the type of applications. First generation applications were really about sort of science applications. But increasingly, there's a lot of effort within sense, Mark is involved, Deborah is involved in these sort of applications where we are using sensors to assist in what you can say are applications which are about us, human concerns, urban monitoring, urban spaces, personal applications, so on and so forth. A lot being driven by sort of the device we all carry, which already has many sensors built in. What this is leading to is a class of applications which are more of participatory sensing application. Either applications where we, as sort of people carrying sensors, contribute data about about the physical world, publish it, share it, analyze it, kind of the analog of what's happening in blogs and Flickr and so on and so forth. Mark and his students have developed this thing called sensorbase.org, which is a sensor-operated website, which is sort of a block for sensor data. There's a whole suite of tools around it. Microsoft has SenseMap, which is placing has a similar role. Idea being that those of us carrying cell phones can really act as sort of free will actuated sensors contributing data. And the other aspect is that in many cases we can conduct sensing campaigns where if I'm interested to know something about an urban space, then I can harness sort of this large number of sort of mobile phone sensors which are out there to do things like get the pulse of a city, public health kind of applications, and so forth. So a lot of these applications are being explored. What is common behind them is that there's a fair concern of privacy and quality of the data. So if you think from the perspective of if I am contributing data about the spaces I'm in, I would like to exercise control over what is the information I'm revealing. It should be according to rules that I'm comfortable with. So there are some implicit sharing rules under which I'm going to be willing to share the data. Primarily in terms of what resolution I'm sharing, my location with, I may not want you to know precisely where I am, and maybe I'm willing to share data only as part of a large group, and so on and so forth. The flip side is, as user of the data, so if I need to know something about, let's say, noise level in a neighborhood in LA because I'm thinking of buying a house out there, well, out there are these readings which people have contributed to this sensor log, how much trust can I place with in them? And so data from a consumer perspective would be more useful if it is verified. When and where were the measurement taken? Was that information correct? Was the value of the data correct? And so on and so forth. So privacy and quality in a lot of these applications really are around sort of three things. Controlling the resolution of the thing, and this is again where algorithms running within the network have to play a role under the sharing rules that we have. The network being able to attest. So if one sensor is providing some reading about the phenomenon, can the network help kind of sign it to say, yeah, this reading is, or this metadata is correct, and the network can leverage the knowledge it has in the sense of readings from other sensors which are being reported. And finally, to the final subscriber, could the network provide the ability to audit it? That is, if I say, okay, I'm using this thing, could you verify or could you sort of prove or audit that this is indeed the case? All these three things are what affect the processing taking place within the network. Moreover, this is not just in the in a non-malicious sense, but rather here you have to be secure against malicious threats. So this brings together sort of integrity type issues together with sort of security type issues. Last slide out here, as part of this NSF project, we are looking at some of these issues where these kind of functions I talked about, sort of cryptographically secure way of controlling resolution, verifying context, verifying sensor values, they kind of run on entities within the network through which the sensor streams are kind of flowing through. So with that, I would sort of like to close. Essentially, I think sort of as I tried to make the case that sort of over the years, based upon the lessons learned, I think there's a significant transition on what these systems are about has happened. Devices like cell phones and all are having a big impact. And what all of that really, I think, in terms of, I think, the number one area where algorithms can make a huge impact is really this whole issue of integrity and controlling the data. It's really about the data. It's not about networking or radio or whatnot. And I think that,